always pulls away.
The people.
Here comes Jim Cam down the middle of the track now.
And the history of the thoroughbred industry.
And it's Trick Materials that wins it by 2.5 lengths.
Now live from Kentucky's bluegrass region, here's Ursel.
Well, Pioneer of the Nile's 2015 stud fee was $60,000. After American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, it's likely to go up. Pioneer of the Nile is by Empire Maker. So is Bodemeister, whose first foal's a yearling. Bodemeister entered stud for a fee of $30,000. Now Empire Maker is making his return to Kentucky by popular demand, and his stud fee for 2016 hadn't been set yet. But you can bet it's going to be substantial. Representing the same sire line, Pioneer of the Nile, Empire Maker, is the brilliant Cairo Prince. And he stands for a fee of $15,000. A gorgeous individual, Cairo Prince, was both the most expensive weaning and expensive yearling from the first crop of Pioneer of the Nile. And he lived up to his looks. He won the Grade 2 Nashua Stakes and was second by nose to Honor Cold in the Grade 2 Remsen as a two-year-old. And after winning the Grade 2 Holy Bull in his first start at three, He won the Kentucky Derby favorite. His first foals are due next year, and let me suggest that you visit Mr. and Mrs. Brer and C. Jones Airdrie Stud. Take a look at the Cairo Prince. He's impressive. For more on the stallions at Airdrie Stud, see the website at airdriestud.com, and keep in mind that the Airdrie Stallions are your key to racing profit.
You're listening to Horse Tales with Ursel Ellis.
All righty, a little mix-up there at the start, but we're on the air now.
Wasn't my fault.
Yes, it was.
I was just sitting here playing with my phone, listening to Fox Sports.
There you go.
Radio. Yes,
well,
sir.
We are here at the Thoroughbred Center out on the Paris-Lexington Road, and we're in the HBPA office.
Yes.
And going to be kind of a busy morning, I think. Some people are going to show up. I know at the top of the hour, Jimmy Boyd's coming in. Jimmy Boyd from the Mirrorworth Retirement Facility out there now. Been an old-time horseman, been around. He was with Don Johnson when they sold that, what was it, $10, $12 million yearling or something like that?
Yeah. I remember that. 13, wasn't it?
I forget. But he'll remember. You don't forget unless, you know.
Yeah, if you've got anything to do with it, yeah, that kind of money, you'll remember.
Yeah, well, I've never had anything to do with that kind of money in my life.
No.
And I don't believe I ever will.
No.
All right. Well, anyway, of course, Mirrorworth got that set up now for retirement for horses, you know, and by Susan Donaldson, who passed away a couple of years ago. And it's a great... I was really impressed when we went out there 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I met Jimmy, and the place is beautiful now. I mean, he keeps
new vocations.
Yeah, right? But he's got the Mirrorworth part, you know,
right.
Where you know just
right.
Retired horses there. Anyway, okay. I think Tim Wilson from Old Friends is going to stop in. I'm not sure.
Good.
Michael Blowen said he was. Michael can't be here today.
Bigger fish to fry.
He got bigger fish. The next 2 weeks he's going to miss.
Well, lots of bigger fish.
He's got to go to talk to I don't know what, seminaries or something. I don't know. Not seminaries.
It certainly wouldn't be seminaries.
No.
It would be maybe a betting seminar.
There you go.
That's about 180 out.
Yeah, religion is not his strong point, is it?
No, I don't think so.
All right, but he told me that Bob Clark was going to stop by, and he has that new book, A Brush with Greatness, and that Ed Bowen might stop by. So we'll see what's going on. But for sure, Jimmy's going to be here at the top of the hour. And anyway, let's see what's going on besides that. What we're going to do, of course, we've got Jackie's announcements. Steve Moody, the feature out at Keeneland today, is the Grade 2 Raven Run. And I might talk about some old Futurity winners. They're running the Futurity tomorrow. It's a Grade 2 race now. It used to be one of the most important races in New York for two-year-olds. But anyway, but that's one of the stakes that are going tomorrow. A bunch of stakes today, contrary to last week. And this is wrong right here. If I got the wrong things?
Is this one of those things where I have to go home and...
No, let's see. Yeah, these are the wrong ones. Oh, well, to hell with it.
You can do two next week.
These are from last week's. Oh no, these are from last week's for the KTA.
Ah.
Yeah, okay. Now, here are the stakes races for today. The Raven Run got a field of 11 out there. It's a grade two race $250,000 for three old fillies going 7 furlongs. And it's gone and drawn a really nice field. The Futurity, as I said, they said Saturday. I thought it was Sunday. I can't keep this straight. Well, it says here Saturday. Wait a minute. Let me look back here in the back because I got the Sunday stakes here, too. Sunday, they got Woodbine, Belmont, the Matron tomorrow.
Yeah, Bob Befford sent something to the Matron. I can't remember what they said, but it was a big deal.
Pretty and Cool. It's a Scat Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, is there. Yeah. That's a nice feel for that thing tomorrow. Island Saint, that's a Spitestown. Todd Pletcher. Tunisaw, Malibu Moon, trained by Todd Pletcher. Constellation of Bellamy Road. Steve Asmussen, Wave of Glory by Ryerson. Librita by Albert Turney. And Pretty and Cool by Baffert.
What's post time for that thing? I want to be sure to turn that
2:34.
That early? Wow.
That early. Yeah, that's. Then they're running tomorrow some big stakes up at Woodbine. That's what I was thinking about. You know, it's hard to keep these things straight, my age. hard to keep anything straight. Sunday, tomorrow, it's the Rude and Riddle Dowager Stakes, grade three. It's got a full field. Well, 10 horse field in that one. And let's see what else they're running tomorrow. The Canadian International with a pot of $1 million. Post time at 5:42. But TV, we don't get HRTV on.
No.
We have DirecTV and they don't carry it.
I know. They got.
It's going to cost a fortune for it to add it on. You know.
I don't even think they offer it. I don't think DirecTV even offers it because they said it's really expensive.
Yeah. Okay. Now, E.P. Taylor is a $500,000 stakes tomorrow. It's a grade one, so there's two of them. Also, the Neartic Stakes, grade two race. And let's see. And the Ontario Fashion Stakes, which is a grade three. So, big day of racing tomorrow at Woodbine. Today, Saturday, it's a Raven Run, as I said. The Futurity has drawn a field of 6 by a competitive field. King Krantz by Muddings, Annual Report by Harlan's Holiday, Legend Keeper by Brother Derek, Ready Dancer by More Than Ready, Manhattan Dan by Big Brown, and Full Salute by Sprightstown. The Athena Stakes is today at Belmont. Hawthorne Derby, grade 3, is at Hawthorne tomorrow. Where else, you know? Okay, what is that you've got written on there? Oh, okay.
Subtle is not his middle name.
Autumn Mistakes, grade 3, is Santa Anita. Well, Ressie came over here and wrote something down. Okay. Oh, he wants to run that commercial in the next break?
We're going to get Moody on.
Oh, you're going to get Moody on that early?
Good.
Oh, good. We'll get old Steve on. All right, well, let me do that right now. Shut up and I'll do it. Let's see. Okay, well, last Saturday at Newmarket, the Group 1 Dubai Dewhurst Stakes for two-year-olds going 7 furlongs was won by Air Force Blue. Bred by Arthur Hancock Stone Farm, owned by Susan Magnier, Michael Tabor, and Derek Smith, and trained by Aiden O'Brien. And Mr. O'Brien said after the race that Air Force Blue was, no doubt, the best two-year-old I've had. Now, boy, that covers a lot of territory. Air Force Blue has won 3 consecutive Group 1 stakes, and his earnings now total $844,552. He's a $490,000 graduate of the Keeneland September sales. Now, at this year's September sales, 21 yearlings by Warfront sold for an average of $600,714. He was the leading sales sire by average, besting Tappet for that distinction. In 2015, Warfront is the sire of 12 stakes winners, 6 of them graded stakes winners, including 3 grade 1 winners. He stands at Claiborne Farm. For more on the stallions there, call Bernie Sams at 859-233-4252 and see the website at claibornefarm.com.
Ursula and I moved to Bourbon County almost 30 years ago. We weren't too happy with the insurance we had when we lived in Lexington. So we thought it'd be a good idea to go to a local company in Paris. Turned out to be a great decision. We asked around, and the name that kept coming up was the Hopewell Company. Hopewell Company is an independent insurance agency. They don't work for an insurance company. They work for you. And they represent a carefully selected group, financially sound, reputable companies that offer the best coverage at competitive prices. Folks at Hopewell prepared to provide you no cost, no obligation review and comparison of your insurance. Cover everything for us, house, cars, barns, farm equipment, liability, you name it. And if something happens, they're right there. We got zapped by lightning, and it sort of fried the wires, and they were there that afternoon. So give them a call. That's the Hopewell Company, Joe or Ted McClain, 987-2347, or stop by the office at 820 Main Street in Paris. They do a great job for you. Ursel guarantees it.
Well, you know, the Clay Ward Agency over in Paris was founded back in 1931 by Mr. James Clay Ward, and they've been providing the finest in equine insurance for over 80 years now. And their success, and it was kind of hard to start a business back in the 30s during the Depression, but they were successful because they based their business on hard work and dedication to detail, great service, and a thorough knowledge of the horse business, and those qualities are still carried on today at the Clay Ward Agency. So whatever your insurance needs, if it pertains to the thoroughbred, the professionals at the Clay Ward Agency are in a great position to supply the best coverage at the best price available. So what you need to do is give Shaq Parrish or Bruce Isaacs or John Hess a call at the Clay Ward Agency. It's an 859 number, 987-1861. There, you can stop by the office at 1102 Main Street right there in Paris. Now, also, while you're there and also closely affiliated with the Clay Ward Agency is Indian Creek Farm. And they've got next consignment coming up in the November breeding stock sale. They always have a great sales. They know how to prep a horses there. They know how to do it right. There's a great boarding facility at Indian Creek. And they've, you know, many major stakes with us both here and abroad. First saw the light of day at Indian Creek. They've raised, boarded, and sold many of the world's finest thoroughbreds. And, of course, the Clay Ward Agency has insured many of the world's finest thoroughbreds. So you can't go wrong. Indian Creek, here is the website, 987-7443. Is their number, and the website is IndianCreekKY.com, IndianCreekKY.com. Great place to board your horses, great people to do business with, both insurance business and if you're in the horse business, great place to keep your horses. So check them out. That's Indian Creek and the Clay Ward Agency, two outstanding organizations right there in Paris, Kentucky.
Want unlimited access, pedigree statistics, and more, all included for $275 per year. Visit brisnet.com/APR and discover why the APR has been the choice of bloodstock and racing professionals for generations, and why a new generation is using APR online.
Now, back to the Thoroughbred Training Center and Ursel Ellis.
All righty, I've got Steve Moody with me this morning. Steve, I didn't know that you got woke up this early.
Well, it's not customary on Saturday, but you know, every now and again.
Okay. Well, you want me to call you earlier next Saturday? And no, I usually get up about 4:30, and I'd be glad to give you a call.
I'd say that I'd prefer this time to 4:30, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, you get to be my age, you'll wake up early. I don't know what to. All right. Well, the feature out at Keeneland today is a Raven Run. I believe that's the only stakes they're running today, isn't it? This is a grade two Raven Run.
Yes, it is. That's the only one.
Well, I don't need but one winner then. But that'll do. I bet you stayed up for Big Blue Madness last night.
I slept through it and didn't get to, when I turned it on, I got to see about, I got to see about 30 seconds of it. It was going off and I was hoping that they would, repeat it. I thought I had recorded it, but, when I went to check on it, I guess I didn't because it wasn't there. And SEC Network's not repeating it anywhere, so it's a matter of luck.
Well, I tell you, it's I couldn't believe Yeah, you know, the stands were packed. There had to be 23,000 people there for that.
Oh, it always is. It's just, it's amazing that I don't know that I'd walk across the street to, you know, stand in line for 2 weeks to, you know, just to walk across the street for that. But I guess the people love the entertainment and all that. The only thing I want to see is that about 10 minutes worth of scrimmage. That's all I care about. But, people do. It is quite a draw for people. There was no tickets to be had. I heard somebody saying yesterday that they ran into an Auburn fan and said something about, y'all have some kind of basketball thing, Friday, don't you? And they were looking, you know, where do we have to go to get a ticket? And they said, well, you're late for that, getting a ticket for that. They were long gone.
Well, it was packed. No two ways about that. It was good. Calipari's always good. A lot of the old players were there, you know. They came back. Of course, they've got that pro game. Is that tomorrow night or is that tonight?
I think it's tonight. I believe it's tonight.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they've got a bunch of old Kentucky boys coming back, and it was fun to watch. It was fun. I enjoyed the scrimmage too. That kid from Canada, good Lord, he can't shoot. I don't know if he missed all night. I mean, I know he was 3 for 3 for the three-point shots that he put up. And he can flat play now. They've got some kids that can play. Calipari was very enthusiastic about the guard play this year. He was, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think everybody's, you know, everybody's crazy about Tyler Ulis and then the guys that got in, Isaiah Briscoe and the Murray kid from Canada. And so they're going
to
be
the other kid that was the first one to sign up. What's his name? He's 6'6" guard. Very, very athletic. Yeah.
Well, he's the one from Chicago.
Is that where he's from?
Charles Matthews. I wouldn't consider him a guard, but
no. This kid is a guard. He was the first kid that the freshman that they signed. But give me the winner of the Raven run.
All right, let's see. Big field in the Raven run, which is always seems like it's the case. This is a 7-furlong race for 3-year-old fillies, grade 2. And lots of ways you could go here. I ended up settling on the two-horse Bar of Gold for John Kimmel. She hasn't won since she started out, against the New York Breds. She's winning. But she has been extremely competitive against Open Company. She said comes off of two straight runner-up efforts behind the talent Philly cavorting, both in a grade 2 and a grade 1 race. And, with that, Philly's not in this race today. So I think she's going to be very tough. She's got tactical speed, but she won't be too far out of it. Should be kind of sitting there in the garden spot early on and get ready to make a run when they turn for home. A horse on the outside, the 10 Chide, another one that's going to be running late. She came flying late in the Dogwood at Churchill to get second spot. She's trained by Al Stahl, and Miggy Mania's got the ride. I think that she's going to be definitely in the thick of it when they come to the wire. And then the three horse for Chad Brown, Iris Jasper, had three straight wins going. kind of tailed off a little bit, was hooking some pretty tough company. Looks like she's well spotted here. I think she could bounce back with a big effort. A horse I thought that's at a kind of a big price that's worth looking at is the horse on the far outside, the 11, I'm a Looker. Had a poor start last time out. Still didn't run, still ran pretty well. I think if she gets out of the gate today, outside post is usually pretty good at Keeneland in that 7 furlong race. So I don't think that would be a detriment at all. I think she's worth using at a big price. Pat Dupuy has got her. John Court has the mount. So we're going to go, let's see, 2-10-3 in the Raven Run.
2-10-3 in the Raven Run. Well, I didn't ask you about the game football game the other night. What'd you think of that?
It's a tough one to stomach, or so, just like the other game we lost. I mean, you know, we had our chances, had a touchdown pass dropped, and had another one. You know, we were down there at the 5 or 6 yard line, threw an interception, and another play here, play there, and but you know, even with all that, I mean, we had the ball with basically time running out with a chance to win. So I guess you can't be that upset, but just, you know, really like to win.
Yeah.
Between the Florida game and the game the other night, you would like to have won at least one of those. But yeah.
Just a couple of plays from being undefeated, aren't they?
Yeah, they got off to such a poor start. Auburn really dominated the first quarter, and then after that, you know, Kentucky settled in and played pretty well. They only gave up one score in the whole second half, but you know, they just couldn't overcome the mistakes that they made, and that it was costly.
Well, nobody expected Auburn to come out passing in the first quarter like they did, you know, and because they haven't been able to do that. But that's what they did, and I think it kind of threw them off because they were preparing for the run. Don't you think that's what happened?
I don't think there's any doubt about it, you know. And they kind of adjusted after that first quarter and settled down, and they only gave up. They gave up 16 after the first quarter, but only 7 in the second half. So you can't really complain too much. It's, you know, we still, you know, we had, like I said, we had, an interception, you know, right down there as we were going in, and then another one that was touchdown pass drop. So,
That would have done it, wouldn't it?
Plus, giving up a critical field goal right there at the end of the first half. That was where we probably should have been able to at least run out the clock, but we didn't. We went 3 and out, and then had a poor punt. And
a kicking game killed us.
Yeah. Place kicker hurt. They had a different guy kicking off, you know, on kickoffs, and he couldn't get it out of the end zone. And
hell, he couldn't get it past the 15-yard line.
Yeah, so that makes it Auburn's. Auburn's one of the better. They have one of the better return guys, I think, in the draft.
They're the best thing you can say, I would think, is that by golly, they're competitive. And they haven't been for a couple of years now. Right, Steve, I'm going to let you go.
All right, Ursel.
Good talking to you, my friend. See you. Talk to you next week.
All right.
Well, First Defense began his career at stud by signing an Eclipse Award winner in his first crop, and his success has continued with every crop to reach the races, and that includes two-year-olds this year. Antonio, a current two-year-old, has won group stakes in France. And here's another first defense two-year-old. There's always another runner by first defense to keep your eye on. NR Defense has posted two impressive wins in as many starts, most recent on October 10 at Law. First defense, grade one winner by Unbridled Song out of Empire Maker's grade one winning half-sister, Honest Lady. She's by Seattle Slough. Stands at Judmont Farm. Also standing at Judmont is grade one winner, Mizzen Mass. Sire of seven grade one winners. Sire of the winners of three Breeders' Cup races and a champ. And a son of the champion sire, Cozim. For more on the Judmont stallions, get in touch with Garrett O'Rourke or Aaron Fry. Their number is 859-272-7629. And see the website at judmont.com.
Everyone in the horse business knows about Sally Van Service. Been in the business for more than six decades. The number of breeding trips made runs into the millions, and many of the finest thoroughbreds in the world have enjoyed a safe trip on a Sally Van. But did you know they can also service your diesel at Sally Vans, or for that matter, take care of your trailer too? Any rig, they can fix it and service it and keep it up to date. We did that with ours. Just give them a call at 859-255-9406. They're conveniently located in Lexington. And when it comes to moving your horse, you can depend that a Sally Van's in tip-top condition. Person behind the wheel is an experienced driver and an experienced horseman. And that's why, for over 60 years, a Sally Van has been the safest way to the winner's circle.
Well, Columbus Day at Belmont, fillies by More Than Ready, ran 1-3 in the $200,000 Pebble Stakes. Partisan Politics, a three-year-old filly bred by Dale Ridge Farm, ran the mile on Belmont's grass in 1:34.2 to win by a length and a half. Finishing third was Consumer Credit, a three-year-old filly bred by Stone Street Thoroughbred Holdings. Partisan Politics, a $175,000 graduate of the Keenan September sales, finished second in Saratoga's Risk Averse Stakes in her previous start. And prior to that, she'd finished second in Belmont's Wild Applause Stakes, and she'd won the P.G. Johnson Stakes at Saratoga, the latter race as a two-year-old last year. For earnings of over $248,000. Consumer Credit, sold for $185,000 at Keeneland, also won stakes at two, taking the Wait a While at Gulfstream. And this year, she has won the Grade 3 Swedish Chance Stakes at Gulfstream and Aqueduct's Memories of Silver Stakes. She's also placed in the Grade 1 American Oaks and the Grade 3 Florida Oaks. She's earned over $362,000. Partisan Politics and Consumer Credit are just two of the more than 140 stakes winners by the internationally successful More Than Ready, Windstar Stallions. For more on the Windstar Stallions, get in touch with Kyle Wilson, Sean Tuckle, or Carolyn Walsh at 859-873-1717 and check the website at windstarfarm.com.
Now, back to Horse Tales with Ursel Ellis.
All righty. You know, we got a little time. Nobody's shown up here yet, so I'm going to do something about on that futurity. It's been being run mañana. Oh, no, today.
Today.
Today. I'll get it right, man. Well, they're going to run it this weekend. They McCain missed
the
then.
History will be the same whether they go today or tomorrow, so go for it.
Well, I know that in 1888, the first one was run by a horse named Proctor Knott. How about that? I know that's right.
There you go.
And Proctor Knott was a pretty good two-year-old, won 60 of his nine starts. He also won the Kenwood. That was up in Chicago. He beat Salvatore in the Junior Champion Stakes. In fact, he beat Salvatore every time they ever met, and they met several times at 2 and 3. Beat him again in the Futurity. It was a field of 14 that day. Proctor Knott, as a 3-0, was a favorite for the Kentucky Derby, but he got beat a neck by Spokane. And Spokane also beat him in the Clark Stakes and in the American Derby. But Proctor Knott got back at him in a Sheridan Handicap up in Chicago. Moved him over to Monmouth Park for the Omnibus Stakes, but he got beat by Longstreet. Salvatore third. Proctor Knott was a gelding. He was a chestnut by Luke Blackburn. He was, as a matter of fact, he was the only good horse ever sired by Luke Blackburn. And Salvatore, of course, although he got beat three times by Proctor Knott, went on to become one of the nation's great horses. And I use that term maybe a little loosely. Was he great? I don't know. You don't want to label a horse great, but he was pretty darn good, let's put it that way. And Proctor Knott did not. Let's see, skip a couple of years, go to 1890, and a horse named Potomac won that, won the Futurity. It was the richest race ever run in America at that time, and had a pot of $67,675. He came back after that with a win in the Flatbush Stakes, and after the death of his owner, he was bred by August Belmont Sr., not the breeder of Man of War, but his father, August Belmont. He was sold to Mr. M.F. Dwyer. He won four of his six races for Mr. Dwyer as a three-year-old, including the realization. They didn't call it the Lawrence realization. It was just the realization. And in the realization, many thought that Montana had won, but the judges gave it to Potomac. He was by a horse named St. Blaze, and he didn't do too well as he stood. Let's see who else here was kind of interesting. 91 winner was a horse named His Highness. He was also bred by Mr. Belmont, sold as a yearling after his breeder's death. And to Mr. H.E. Gideon, he was a bay. He was by a horse named The Ill-Used. Sensational two-year-old, won 9 of his 12 starts as a two-year-old. Won the Futurity under 130 pounds, beating a field of 21. And he went into winter quarters with a great reputation. But was a disappointment at 3. Turned out to be strictly a sprinter. Ogden won it in 1886. And Mr. Walter Vosburgh wrote in about him that he had received a telegraph from Mr. John S. Campbell, who was from Montana, asking if Ogden had been nominated to any of the races in the East, and he found that he was eligible for the Futurity and a couple other races, and let him know. And a week later, Ogden arrived at Sheepshead Bay in New York, and seems he had been tried at Butte, Montana. I don't know how hard it is to try him out there, but anyway, he'd been held in reserve of Mr. Campbell, had no record of any engagements, but in the Futurity, he beat the favorite, was Ornament, and he won it by 2 lengths. So it was kind of a nice story there. In the Flatbush, Ornament had beat him, but the Great Western Stakes, Ogden beat Crackfield, included Typhoon, Voter, and Ornament. Ogden did not perform well at 3 and 4, winning but 1 stakes. That was a Long Island handicap, and he went to stud and did not race in 1899 and in 1900. Came back in 1901, and Mr. William Lakeland bought him, and as age 7, he won 6 of his 9 starts, including 2 in 1 day. That's nice. That's what you call interval racing, interval training, at Coney Island. Sent him back to stud and at John Madden's Hamburg place, and he proved to be a very good sire. He sired Sir Martin, he sired Fayette, sired the Finn, who was a nice stud himself, Florafina, Star Jasmine, Yankee Witch, and Ogden was the son of Kilwayne. Another winner that I like to talk about a little bit is a little bit more recent than him, and that would be Battlefield, who was foaled in 1948 by War Relic at a Dark Display by Display. And he was bred by Mr. John A. Bell Jr., that was John A. Bell III's daddy. And he was owned by George Widener, trained by W.H. Mulholland. I remember this horse, big, good-looking chestnut horse that raced for George Widener. As a matter of fact, he went to stud right there on Old Kenny Farm and on off Ironworks Pike there on Kenny Lane. And he had a kind of a bad disposition. I know that he was tough to handle, let's put it. But, you know, well, he was inbred to Fair Play. You know, he was by War Relic, who was a grandson of Fair Play, and by Display, who was by Fair Play. So it was inbred 3x3 to Fair Play, which means that's 4x4 to Hastings, and that's where he got his bad temperament. Man of War was not like that. You know, Man of War was a pretty easy horse to handle. But Battlefield was a pretty good kind of a stud horse. Also, I mean, he sired a couple of nice things. Sorry, I guess the best stakes winner was Yorktown. And he was a broodmare sire of arts and letters, as a matter of fact. And of course, War Relic was a top sire. He was sire of intent. And that line's going strong right now through Tis now. But Mr. Joe Palmer wrote about Battlefield a little bit. I'm going to take a commercial break and come back and do that. We'll talk about what Joe Palmer had to write about Battlefield. Well, the first foal by Albertus Maximus, a two-year-old, and he's the sire of Meyerheart, goes on, never out of the money in five starts. Win of her first start, going 4.5 furlongs. Win of her second start, that was the Angie C Stakes, going 6 furlongs, and placed in 3 more stakes, a distance is up to a mile and a 16th. He's the sire of Azuma Mura, a win of her first start, going 5.5 furlongs at law. He's the sire of Dobly Fondo, a win of her first start by 8 lengths, a new track record time. And then second in Group 3 stakes in Panama. That's a nice start for Albertus Maximus because, you know, he won the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. He won the Grade 1 Don Handicap going a mile and an eighth. He won the Grade 1 Windy Sands Handicap at Del Mar. His time in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile was 1:33.2. Placed in 3 more graded stakes and earned over $1,328,000. Albertus Maximus is at Shadwell Farm. Why don't you give stallion manager Ken Barnes a call over at Shadwell? Here's the number, 224-4585. Ask about breeding incentives and see the website at shadwellfarm.com. Jackie's going to talk a little bit about our good friend Ralph Quillen at Quillen Tack. Let me tell you where you can find Quillen Tack before you can do anything else. It's in Paris. Just go in the Lexington Paris Road and you go to the third stoplight in Paris and look to your left, and there is Quillen Tack and Leather.
Absolutely, right across from Ken's Market.
Right.
You don't have a problem. They've got wonderful stuff in there. It's fun just to go in there, even if you're not looking to buy anything. Of course, I usually pick up something. They have shanks. They have every kind of halter known to man. They have brass nameplates. And, I mean, I can't, you know, I was going to say something. They've got newborn and foal muzzles. And I thought, well, that's out of season, but it's really not because we got all these Southern Hemisphere babies running around the place. It's amazing. Drive down the road and there they are. So even out of our season, Quillen can take care of anything you need. They've got collars for cats. They got collars for dogs. They got, and you know what? If you have a horse crazy girl, they can make stuff in pink leather for your little pony club girl.
Yuck.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'll tell you what, pony club, you could have a halter, but you're not better not show up in anything but brown leather on your pony or you will be asked to do so. They have checkbook covers. They have, you know, they made for me a little folding thing where I put my credit cards, driver's license, and stuff, so that doesn't get lost and it's a mess. Oh, they've got sleigh bells for your door for Christmas.
Wow.
All kind of fun stuff. It's Quillen, Quillin.com. And don't forget Ralph's beer place.
Oh.
Rooster Brew down in Paris.
Yeah, it's on Main Street in Paris, too. Just keep going straight.
And look to your left.
And look to your left. And
you pass 4 churches. And it's
down from the library.
Read a book and have a beer. I love it.
Well, they have a lot of fun down at Rooster Brew.
I imagine.
Yeah, they do. It's nice. I like to go in there because I always see somebody I know.
Yeah, it's very friendly.
Well, the only horse since Dancing to top the general sire list 3 times is Giant's Causeway. He also ranked number 1 on the 2-year-old sire list twice. The leading sire on the juvenile sire list this year, Scat Daddy, he's a sire of 7 2-year-old stakes winners this year. He had another one yesterday. By golly, I wonder if that made it 8. Well, anyway, I should have checked it before I came in. Well, the leading freshman sire of 2015, of course, is Uncle Mo. I think he's up to 13 2-year-old winners now, too. The leading second crop sire this year is Munnings. Now, Giants, Causeway, and Scat Daddy, and Uncle Mo, and Munnings, they all stand at Ashford Stud. Champion Declaration of War has all the credentials to be the next leading sire at Ashford Stud. He was undefeated at 2. He was the champion older male in all of Europe. He's by the brilliant war front, a great sire. Thus, he descends from the famed sire line that gave us Giant's Causeway. And like Giant's Causeway, he's out of a daughter of Rahi from a prolific stakes family. And like Giant's Causeway, in his only start on the dirt, turned in a brilliant performance in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Now, the first foals by declaration of war, weanlings. Take note of them at the upcoming sales. And for more on the stallions at Ashford Stud, just call the farm. Here's their number, 859-873-7088. And take a look at the website, coolmore.com.
You're listening to Horse Tales with Ursulele.
All right, let's get back to Battlefield. I want to talk a little bit about him now, and this was written by Joe Palmer in American Racehorses of 1950. That's just like yesterday. Anyway, so here we go. This is from Joe Palmer. It is sometimes difficult to tell bad luck when you see it. If in 1948 the foals of George D. Widener's old Kenny Farm had been predominantly male, as every breeder hopes, someone else would have had the leading two-year-old in 1950. As it happened, they were mostly fillies. So in 1949, Mr. Widener's trainer, Bert Mulholland, was asked to inspect the Saratoga yearlings and to pick up a colt or two to supplement the yearlings which would carry the blue and light blue silks of 1950. With a judgment formed over many years of training, and, as he would readily admit, a prodigious amount of luck, Mr. Mulholland went to the sales and bought, as far as two-year-old racing goes, the best colt there. He was a long way from the most expensive colt, cost only $4,500, but in 1950, he won $198,677.50. The odd 50 cents will never again appear in racing statistics, the practice being to drop off such amounts. Mr. Mulholland, figuring this was enough, brought only one colt. The colt, of course, was Battlefield, a handsome chestnut with a blaze down his face, which he had inherited from both sides of his pedigree. He was bred by John A. Bell, Jr. Jr., incidentally, is to distinguish him from his son, John A. Bell III, who manages the John A. Bell farm on a part of the old Hamburg place of John E. Madden near Lexington, and the colt was foaled on May 8, 1948. His pedigree was apparently deliberately calculated to frighten children. His sire was War Relic by Man of War, and while Man of War did not inherit quite the raging temper of the Fair Play line, he was a bold and impetuous horse, not given to indulging the trifling habits of people. The dam was Dark Display by Display, and Display spent his productive years in a stall which was padded halfway up so that he would have less chance to injure himself when he kicked the walls, and often wore a muzzle to keep from biting himself. There was not, on either side of the pedigree, any particular viciousness, and Display could be trusted more with people than with fences, of which he liked to kick out the planks. But they were both extremely high-spirited horses, and Fair Play, sire of both Man of War and Display, was a lambent fiend. To inbreed to him, with only two free generations, went against all reason. So Mr. Bell inbred to him anyway and got the leading two-year-old of his year. This is known as breeding science. Dark Display, the dam, raced seven times as a two-year-old, which was never placed, though she won $330 in fourth money. She had had two previous foals, of which only one had raced. This was Count Display, which had won five races and had taken 3 years to do it. She had some breeding credentials, however, being a three-quarter sister to Dark Discovery, which won only one stakes, the Gallant Fox Handicap, but was second or third in 10 more, including seconds in the CCA Oaks and Ladies Handicap. Back of her was a Kilmer pedigree, the second dam being by Traumer, the third dam by Sunbriar. The defiled American blood came into the pedigree with the infusion of the Fair Play strain, and this is where it got good. All right, who have I got here already?
Merriworth.
Oh, hey, there we go. We've got Bob over there, and I got Jimmy here. Y'all introduce yourselves to each other.
Let me do a commercial. Can I say something real quick?
Yeah.
I was looking at the November sale catalog. Remember Pollard's Vision?
Yeah. Yeah. He won almost a million and a half. He's 14. He's been at stud, and he's had some success right here. He's in the sale.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know who's going to buy a 14-year-old stud, but it might be worth looking at for Michael. You know, if they don't want him for stud, it doesn't say. Let me ask you something else. I'm looking through these things. This says Chestnut Mare foaled in 2012.
No, she ain't a mare then, is she?
No, she's not a mare. No. She's a filly.
No, she's bred.
Huh?
Is she bred?
Oh, yeah, she is. There you go.
There you go.
I didn't look. I was thinking my pathetic math was even worse.
Bob, you been in touch with Dad? Is he coming?
Dad should be here 9:30-ish.
9:30-ish? Okay. I'll tell you what we'll do.
If we can wait that long.
Huh? If we can wait that long?
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We can wait.
It's a big moment.
You're going to have to wait. I'm going to get Jimmy on here in a minute. Yeah. All right. Let me do some commercials. I'm going to have Jimmy Boyd on. Jimmy, an old-time horseman, for crying out loud. He'd been around, well, he hadn't been around as long as I have, but then who has? Most of my contemporaries are pushing up daisies. All right. Well, let me do this real quick. Archer signed runners, even though he was a superior grade one stakes winner going a mile and an eighth. And they did descend from the noted stamina sire line of Arch, Chris S. and Roberto. His first crop two-year-olds have come out running. His Toes on Ice, Never Out of the Money, has won the $100,000 Barrett's Juvenile Stakes in California. And Next Shares finished second in the Saratoga's Grade 2, $200,000 with Anticipation Stakes. Then there is Arcatur, winner last time out of a maiden special at Del Mar. Archella, a maiden special winner at Delamere. Theory of Change, winner first time out of a maiden special at Saratoga. Tia Floor, winner of a maiden special at Keeneland and just her second start. What a Classy Lady, a maiden special winner at Churchill. And we can go on, as 20 of his first crop two-year-olds have won a place. Arch is a real bargain sire. Stands for $5,000 to win a full stanza nurses. And he's eligible for Spendthrift's popular Breed Secure program. And did you see Conquest Enforcer, a two-year-old Cobra in the Mischief, win the $150,000 Cup and Saucer Stakes at Woodbine last Sunday? Won by 6 3/4 lengths, like Arch. In the Mischief stands at Spendthrift Farm. For more on the stallions there, get in touch with Des Dempsey, Brian Lyle, Mark Toothacker. And the number over there is 294-0030. And see the website at SpendthriftFarm.com. All right, well, any time that you see something running in one of some of these stakes races, and you see a lot of them being saddled by Todd Pletcher, Tony Dutrell, Jerry Holland off right on the coast, or Michael Maker, I'll spit it out here in a minute. Well, you can bet that they're running on Lubricin. It's a product developed by Dr. Steve Allday, and it's a product endorsed by many other owners and trainers and veterinarians across the country. And he also developed a product named Reborn. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But both those products, incidentally, are all natural. They're test-free. Lubricin, to put it simply, sustains the integrity of joint fluids and can help reduce the cost of, acid injections and that kind of stuff like that. They also make it for humans. By golly, I forgot to take mine this morning. I'm sitting here aching, too. Jackie, run home and get that bottle of Lubricin and bring it here, would you?
All right, I will. I'm leaving right now.
All right. Well, Reborn is 100% sterile, whole concentrated natural bovine colostrum. It's safe. It's easy to use. Starting with foals. And if you've got foals, some of those southern hemisphere foals we see running around here now, never used to see that. But by golly, you see them now. Anyway, it'd be a good idea to put them on it because what it does, it strengthens the foal's immune system while he's nursing the mare because of its high concentration of growth factors and antibodies. So they're two great products. And as I say, they're both test-free. You don't have to worry about passing a spit box. And for more information, go to the website. That would be lubricin.com, lubricin.com, a reborn. .com, reborne.com. You can buy them at Old Friends, at KBC in Lexington, and at Horse Sense in Versailles. Well, Broken Vow is the broodmare sire of Run Happy, recent winner of Keeneland's Grade 3 Phoenix, and prior to that of the Grade 1 King's Bishop, Run Happy scheduled to go next in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Sprint. He's the first foal from the good winner, Bella Jolie. Broken Valley sired a long list of top distaffers. And of course, that bodes well for his future as a broodmare sire. His most recent stakes filly is Trieste, winner October 7th of a stakes in France. Then there is the Grade 1 winner, Rosalind. She goes in stakes today. She's already earned more than $860,000. The Grade 1 winner, Unbridled Bell, she earned over $1,900,000. Grade 1 winner, Sassy Image, winner of over $826,000. Grade 1 winner, Cotton Blossom, she earned over $724,000. And how would you like to have that bunch for your broodmare band? And we can go on because Broken Valor sired 61 stakes winners and 119 black type horses. A success by any measure, Broken Valor by Unbridled stands a Pin Oak Stud, home also of the Stallions Alternation and Cowboy Cal. For more on the Stallions, call Clifford Barry or Nancy Stevens at 859-873-1420 and see the website, pinoakstud.com.
Now, back to the Thoroughbred Training Center and Ursula Ellis.
All righty. I got Jimmy Boyd with me. And how we went all these years, Jimmy, without meeting, I don't know.
I don't know either, but I'm grateful to be here.
Well, above ground or in here?
Here. I give thanks every day.
Scoot a little closer to that microphone.
There you go.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there you go. Don't get nervous about
it. No, I won't be nervous.
Old folks like us don't get nervous, too, anymore.
No, just get old.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm older than you, I'm sure. Are you from around here?
Yes, sir. I grew up in Lexington, and I started working with horses in 1972 for Herman Goodpasture.
Oh, Herman. One of my favorite. Boy, what a horseman Herman was.
Yeah, he had that mare White Beauty.
Yeah.
We used to get him upset. We told him she was by the teaser.
Yeah.
And get him real upset.
He went through hell getting her registered, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And she was a little flighty, to say the least.
Well, she could run.
Yes, she could.
Yeah.
Yep. She won a race at Kingland one time when it was pouring down rain because she would spook when she'd run, come down the lane,
mm-hmm.
if there was people on the fence. So the day it was pouring down rain, she won.
Oh.
Yeah.
Herman did it all, didn't he?
He sure did.
Yeah. He stood Balladeer over there.
A horse named Kentucky Colonel.
Yeah.
And Barb's Delight. He run second.
Did he have Barb's Delight?
Sure did.
Yeah, ran second in the Derby.
But with the Kentucky Colonel, he was so old at the time, we could actually lead him with a bell and twine.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember Balladeer at all? Was that before your time?
No, that was before my time.
Oh, okay. I remember him all.
Yeah.
Oh, he had another horse over there that Papa Redbird?
Papa Redbird.
Yeah.
He was the sire of Kentucky Colonel.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. That was at Balladeer sire line, you know, because they had bought Balladeer from Idlehour Farm, you know, Mr. Bradley, Colonel Bradley,
and
brought him. They had a choice between Blue Larkspur and Balladeer, as Herman told me, and they picked Balladeer because he was the younger of the two. But they were both, he was a good stud. They did very well with him.
Yes, they did.
How long did you work for Herman?
About 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's a funny thing. My cousin on his family side was Herman's nephew. And so he got me a job out there.
Okay.
And I thought I would go out there and work for a couple of years. That was when Secretariat was running big. And I thought it'd be fun to work with horses for, you know, a couple of years, and then I'd do something different.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, 2015.
Here you are, huh?
And I'm still doing horses.
Yeah.
You think you like it enough, you're going to...
I think I really love it.
Yeah. Did your family have any interest in horses or anything?
The neat thing is my dad, when he was growing up, he used to gallop horses and everything, and then he had a family. He decided he couldn't make it working with horses, so he got in the hospital supply business and started selling medical supplies and stuff. And then he came up with the idea to start selling to veterinarians.
Uh-huh.
And the first veterinarian he met was Dr. Copeland.
Bobby Copeland?
Bobby.
Yeah.
He actually set up his hospital when he built it in Paris.
Yeah.
And then he went to work for Dr. Copeland for a couple of days. And I was so excited because I was going to get to go out there and maybe get a job there. And my dad only stayed a couple of days because he wanted to go back to the medical supply business.
Yeah.
But they're still friends to this day.
Is that your dad still alive?
Yes, sir.
So's Bob.
Yeah. Believe it or not, the reason I got interested in the horses, my dad used to get the Thoroughbred Record.
Yeah.
And I would read it from the front page to the back. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got interested in
horses. Yeah. But that was a good magazine because it went out of business. And I think the last editor there was Arnold Kirkpatrick. And but it went out of business. Then the Thoroughbred Times kicked over. Now it's out of business. Blood Horse is still going on.
But the funny thing about it, the ad on the back of the Blood Horse every week
was Mirworth.
Mirworth Farm.
Well, I'll tell you a little story about that. I went to work for the Blood Horse in... What time is it? Getting close. I went to work for the Blood Horse in 1958. I'd left a racetrack. I figured, you know, I couldn't support a family. I'm making $75 a week. We weren't winning any races anyway. So anyway, I went to work there.
Yeah.
And I wrote the back page. They had the back page of that. And I wrote the ads for that for a long time, for about 10 years. And I'd left the Blood Horse and went into an advertising agency with another fella, and we had that account, the Mirworth account. Knew Walter pretty good, Walter Simon pretty good. Never met Miss Donaldson.
Yes.
But I didn't know Walter.
She really loved animals. She set up a trust in 1989 to take care of the horses the rest of their life.
Yeah.
We actually have 160 horses on the property right now. We got 1,200 acres. Couple years ago, we decided our biggest expense out there was feeding the horses hay in the winter.
Yeah.
So we put in 80 acres of hay. This past summer, we baled 13,000 bales of hay.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow. So we're going
to. You did it yourself.
Yes, sir.
Did you?
Builds character.
Yeah. That's great. Well, what when you left Herman, where'd you go?
I actually went to Crescent Farm, Donald Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
The coal business was booming in the 70s, and all these coal people were coming down here buying farms.
Yeah.
And I went to work at Gainesway in 1974, and they put me back in the father's barn on the farm, and it was with partnership horses.
Uh-huh.
And they were owned together with John Gaines and Donald Johnson. So Mr. Johnson used to come over there all the time and see his horses, and I got to be real good.
Yeah.
I talked to him a lot and everything, and they were developing the farm right across the street.
On Bryan Station, acres. Yeah.
And I decided, Joe Taylor came back here one day and said, these horses are getting ready to leave. Do you want to stay or go? I said, I'm going.
Is that right?
Because I wanted to get on a brand new farm that was developing, and hopefully I could work my way up through the ranks.
Uh-huh.
And in 1981, a gentleman named Hooper Roth gave me a break. He said, if I want you to go to Maryland and pick this mare up, when you get back, I'll promote you to be my assistant.
Yeah.
And that's the man that I'm grateful for this.
Yeah.
Because he actually gave me a break in this business.
Yeah. Where was Hooper's farm? You know, I never met that gentleman. Yeah.
Hooper came down here from Maryland and became the stallion manager at Spindthrift.
Okay.
And then they hired him as the farm manager at Crescent Farm. He stayed there for like 2 or 3 years, and he promoted me to be his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Then I became, the rest is history. Mm-hmm. Other people gave me chances.
Yeah.
After he did.
Yeah. Well, that's that. What was it, that yearling that y'all sold? What'd y'all get for that yearling?
We sold a $10 million yearling in 1983 called Snappy Dancer.
Yeah.
He couldn't beat a fat man to the table. Turned up sterile and never raced.
So, oh, my God.
Couldn't beat a fat man to the table. I had heard that one before. Write that down, Jack.
I will.
All right. Let me take a little break, and I'll get right back to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, Point of Entry is the most accomplished among the 148 stakes winners by Dynaformer. He won 5 Grade 1 stakes and earned $2,494,490. He's a brilliant multiple Grade 1 winner by a superb sire. That's enough right there. Then look at Point of Entry's female family. There are a few young stallions anywhere in the world that can match it for Grade 1 performance. He's a half-brother to the classic winner Pine Allen, winner of the Grade 1 Alabama and the Grade 1 Gazelle, both on the dirt. His dam by Seeking a Goal is a half-sister to the winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Distaff. His third dam won the Classic Alabama, produced a champion, and his grand dam of two grade one winners. Her dam was a champion sprinter, and the dam of a champion sprinter. Fantastic pedigree, heavy with grade one winners on both dirt and grass. And to top it all off, Point of Entry's first crop weanlings are outstanding. Yeah, you'll be seeing some of them at the November breeding stock sales. Point of Entry stands at Edina Springs, Kentucky. Inquiries to Cormac Bethnock or Jack Brothers at 859-987-1798. And see the website, AdinaStallions.com.
Hear this. Fox Sports 1580 is available everywhere you want to listen on our free iHeartRadio app. Download it now. WWTF Georgetown, Lexington.
The Pioneer of the Niles 2015 stud fee was $60,000 after American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. Well, you know it's going to go up. Pioneer of the Nile is by Empire Maker. So is Bodemeister. His first foals of yearlings, Bodemeister entered stud for a fee of $30,000. Now Empire Maker is coming back to Kentucky by popular demand, and his stud fee, although it hadn't been announced yet, you can bet it's going to be substantial. Representing the same sire line, by then and now, Empire Maker is the brilliant Cairo Prince. He stands at for a fee of $15,000. The gorgeous individual, Cairo Prince, won both the most expensive weanling and expensive yearling from his first crop by Pioneer of the Nile, and he lived up to his looks. Won the Grade Two Nasher Stakes and was second by Nose to Honor Code in the Grade Two Remsen as a 2-year-old. After winning the Grade Two Holy Bull in his first start at three, he was a favorite for the Kentucky Derby. His first foals are due next year, and let me suggest that you visit Mr. and Mrs. Bird and see Don's Airdrie Stud and take a look at Cairo Prince. Very impressive horse. For more on the stallions at Airdrie Stud, see the website at airdriestud.com, and remember, the Airdrie Stallions are your key to racing profit.
Now, back to the Thoroughbred Training Center and Ursula Ellis.
All right. Well, I'm talking to Jimmy Boyd, who manages Mirrorworth Farm. It's a retirement facility out there. It's established by the late Mrs. Susan Donaldson, who was the daughter of Walter Salmon, who owned Mirrorworth Farm. And as I said, I used to write their ads. They had some studs out there many years ago, too. Well, of course, they stood aerial at one time.
I think a horse named Sunglow also.
Yeah, they had Sun Gold Sire, Sword Dancer, and was there. They had a horse named Invigorator. I can't remember anymore, but there was three or four stud horses that they had out there.
Well, they actually have a cemetery up there on part of the farm.
Yeah.
And they have the horses buried. Mrs. Donaldson loved animals so much, she would bury her cats and dogs across from them. And she's actually buried up on the farm between two trees.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Donaldson herself. Yeah. Do you have to get special permission for her to be buried there? I guess they got it.
I would think so, but I actually went to another funeral on another farm. I won't mention the name of the farm, but they buried a gentleman back between two paddocks.
Is that right?
And I actually went to that service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Yeah.
Well, some of the horse graves are sinking now.
Yeah.
Because we mow right over top of them, and they're sinking.
Yeah.
The neat thing is we have like 160 horses on the farm right now.
Wow, that's amazing. Just retired horses.
No, we actually partnered up with a group called New Vocations who rehab horses and retrain them for other careers. And they have one of the barns out there for rehab. Once a horse gets so far along and recovers from its injury, they'll go to their training facility.
Yeah.
And that's up in Ohio.
No, they actually have one out here the Avon exit, West Wind Farm.
Yeah.
Yeah, on Bethel Road.
But they're actually going to build a facility out on our farm. We let them use it like 80 acres of land.
Uh-huh.
They're going to build two barns, an indoor riding arena, an outdoor riding arena, and an office.
Wow. 180, boy, that's a lot of horses. I don't know how you do that. Most of them geldings and mares, I assume.
Yes, we only have one stud horse. He's a teaser, and his name's Angel. Once he passes on.
He's an angel, huh?
Yes. I've heard some stories about him. He was hard to catch. He didn't like his job very much.
Is that right?
No. The neat thing is we actually put him in groups. When I first went there, there was a lot of horses isolated in paddocks.
Yeah.
We had like 36 paddocks in one area.
Good Lord.
And we've cleared them all out, and we put them in groups.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you why they had those paddocks. Walter got to the point where he would separate his colts that were in his yearling sales. And
I'd do that, too. I'd always do that in the, like, January or February of their yearling year.
Uh-huh.
But I would go by the sign.
Would you?
Yes.
Yeah.
When I'd separate them.
My dad used to wean by the sign and all that.
Well, I read a story one time. Ted Carr always weaned by the sign. And until I read that article, I weaned them if they made me mad, or there was a bad mare, or the foal wasn't developing right.
Yeah,
I would have to wean them. But later years of weaning horses, I would always go by the sign.
Yeah.
It worked real well.
Well, you had to make up your mind how to do it some way. That's what my dad said. My dad used to manage Dixiana over here, and he did everything by the sign.
Yep.
And I said, "Dad, you don't really believe that, do you?" He said, "Well, you know, it just gives me time to do it." And, "Yeah, I believe it." He says.
It seems to work with the weather, too, in the summer and stuff. When you're weaning that first group of horses and stuff, the weather seems to be mild that day, and the horses seem to recover quickly from the weaning.
Yeah. Come on now, you don't believe all that, do you?
I just experience it. That's all I can say. If I'm around it, that's all I can say.
You are an old-time horseman. Yeah, you know.
I don't mind getting up every morning because I love doing it.
Well, that's wonderful that you do that, you know. And taking care of horses like that, you know, how do you find them?
Well, we actually go through a referral if we get referred by a group. But now, lately, we're letting them come through new vocations.
Uh-huh.
If they have horses they can't retrain, or they have injuries and they can't do it, get them adopted out, we'll take them over to my side.
What would be your capacity over there?
Well, we're only using about 560 acres of it right now.
And how many acres you have?
We have 1,200. But I'll set aside, I got 80 acres of hay right now, and I'm going to set aside another 40 acres for hay.
Because
once a hay field plays out, you got to put it somewhere else.
Yeah.
You got to get every year to recover.
Yeah.
So we can go on.
Yeah. Well, now, you still got those separate paddocks like you were talking about?
No, we tore them out, and we actually built other paddocks by the barns.
Okay.
This was in a certain area we call the Brack Farm. And we put in fields. We put in three fields. We got horses in fields. And believe it or not, I want to say thank you for the people that actually let me work there. And that's Elizabeth, Leanne, and Sandy.
Uh-huh.
And they actually managed the trust. They actually listen to me, too. It's amazing. Wow. I've worked for a lot of people that won't listen to you. But one year, it's a funny story. I told them all I wanted for Christmas was catch pens at each field. Because these horses had been isolated, and they kind of got feral like a cat.
Yeah.
Didn't want people fooling with them. So we actually got catch pens at each field, and we feed them in the mornings they come in. If they're injured or something, that's the way we can catch them.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's – I'll tell you what – we used to live right next door at Homewood Farm back when Jimmy Dryman was there. I don't know if you ever knew Jimmy or not.
He was Domino Stud, wasn't he?
Yeah, he owned Domino Stud at one time, but he'd sold it. He still owned it. He still owned it, didn't he? Remember we were sent that mare over to be bred?
Well, he had an interest in those stallions, but he did not, I don't think he owned it at the time.
Didn't own it at that time?
He had
no, Mr. Terry owned it at that time.
Yeah, he sold it to Mr. Terry.
But it's just west of you all, still on Bethel, it was a Homewood Farm, and we were there with Jimmy. And when we turned in, we went over there to your old shindig, get your head a couple of weeks ago, and... we turned in there, and I want to compliment you because the place looked gorgeous.
I appreciate it.
And
it's been a lot of hard work, and I can't do it without the people that work there.
Yeah. And we looked over to the right, and there was a bunch of, I guess, some of your old retirees turned there on the right.
I actually have one group I call the senior field so that I can relate to them. And then we have them divided in groups, and the neat thing is they're happy
Yeah.
I mean, they all look like they're pregnant, even the boys.
Yeah.
But it's good land out there.
Oh, yeah, it's good land.
We're renovating all the whole farm. We've only got two more fields to actually redo, and then all the fencing will be done. And then I think that we'll continue to fence because they like the way it looks, and we're going up Dolan and fence it all in, but it won't be for horses.
Yeah.
Eventually down the road, if we need it, we'll go get it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we were driving down that lane to there, and it place was Jack and I both said, "My gosh, look at this." Uh-huh. And then we looked over on the right, and it must, how many did you have in that field in there? 15 or 20?
I got 18 in that field on the right hand side, but it's like a 40 acre field.
Yeah. But it
slick
was,
and fat, looking wonderful. I mean, running around. They
I
look
mean,
great.
I never saw so many dapples in my life. Those horses look fantastic.
The neat thing is there were some horses when I first went there, they were had been in training at Windstar Farm.
Uh-huh.
And it was three gray mares. And the trainer at the time said that they need to come home and be retired. So I brought them all home within a week. And then I turned them out in a field, and they started getting sound again and everything. And I said, two of these horses, we need to give a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold them to certain people, and one of them turned out to win $150,000.
Is that right?
The other one won $80,000. The other one we kept behind. A year later, we got new vocations to take her and get her adopted out, and now she's winning horse shows.
That's great.
That's wonderful.
And that makes you feel good because they actually get a different career instead of hanging out with me.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, there's other horses out there that probably could do that, but we get attached to them, and they're not going nowhere.
Yeah. We share a blacksmith, you know.
I know the old Irish guy.
Conor McCarthy.
Yeah, I had to pray to get him out there.
Did you?
At first when it
He's
was,
good.
Yeah, he is. And when we first started doing it, it was pretty rough.
Yeah.
And now they've all settled in. We supply the big fans in the summertime when he comes to trim the horses.
You go.
He brings the heater in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's actually coming out there Tuesday.
Okay.
We got some. We actually do half the horses 1 month and the other half the horses the next month.
Mm-hmm.
And then any horses got shoes on, we reset them every month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have one big draft horse. He's out of a nurse mare, and his name's Mikey. He's 10 years old, and he's actually the one horse on the whole farm that my bosses have adopted as the flagship horse.
Yeah.
But he has to go on weight loss during the spring and summer.
I'll bet.
So he's not too happy. He tears up boards all summer long, but he's getting ready to go back to his girlfriend's in a couple of weeks.
Oh, fun. Now, how did that come about? Just because nobody wanted the nurse mare foal?
No, the farmer actually took the horse, and then he got tired of him, and Susan said, I'll take him.
Ah,
hey,
that's
Bob.
Great. Wonderful.
Are you in touch with Ed? Not at the moment.
He said he'd be here at 9:30.
Does he know to come here instead of the clocker thing? I told him to go building back to back.
Okay.
We actually have 80 cats, too. That
80
oh my.
Cats.
When I first went there, we worked with the Humane Society and got them all caught and fixed. So we don't see as many cats as we used to.
They don't have many mice
amazing.
Either, do you?
How many barns you got?
We have 8 barns.
Hey, that's 10 cats a barn.
Yeah.
And then we have like 18 fields and 20-something paddocks that we've rebuilt.
Wow, that's wonderful. Bless her heart. She did a good thing, didn't she?
Well, we always do. We're going to always have 2 fields sitting empty because these horses stay on them 24 hours a day. And we'll be able to rotate.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a historic farm, right?
It really is. The neat thing is my dad lived out there when he was 13.
Is that right?
And that means my grandfather worked out there. 1 year with Merriworth Farm, the gentleman that owned the farm didn't want to load the yearlings on the vans. He was afraid they'd get hurt. They actually walked 99 yearlings to Kingland. It took 4.5 hours. They let my dad do the walk, but they wouldn't let him lead a horse.
Is that
he
right?
He was too young at the time, but he actually did the walk with him.
Now, what?
How many miles?
What time frame was that?
Probably back in the 50s or maybe late 40s.
in a, if it was in the 40s.
Because of the war.
Yeah. But
they didn't have gasoline stuff, right?
He didn't want to put his horses on the trucks. He was afraid they'd get hurt.
They walked them. Starting, I don't know if they ended up that way. Mr. Simon usually sold at Saratoga.
Yeah.
So they walked them down to the train station out on South Broadway out there, you know. And they used to have the big cars, trains, you know. You could get, I think, maybe 16 horses on a car, 12 or something like that. That's where they walked them to. But Dixiana had a barn car that they...
Railroad car
that they parked down there also. So that's where they were walking them to, which, you know, that was a little further than Keeneland when you get right down to it.
Oh, definitely. And they said they had the sheriff out there as an escort.
Yeah.
And everything, so...
I remember something about that, you know, somebody telling me about that. I'm going to read this when we get back.
That's a neat history of Mirror.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. That's
no problem. That's the history, and that's the reason we're there.
All right, I got to take another break here because it's time to take care of Claiborne Farm, because last Saturday in Newmarket, the Group 1 Dubai Dewhurst Stakes for two-year-olds going 7 furlongs was won by Air Force Blue, bred by Stone Farm and owned by Susan Magnier, Michael Tabor, and Derek Smith, trained by Aiden O'Brien, who said after the race, now this is Aiden's quote, that Air Force Blue was... no doubt the best two-year-old I've had. Now, boy, does that cover a lot of territory. Now, Air Force Blue has won 3 straight Group 1 stakes. He's earned over $844,000 now. He's a $490,000 graduate of the Keeneland September sales. At this year's September sales, 21 yearlings by Warfront sold for an average of $600,714. He was the leading sales sire by average, besting Tappet for that distinction. In 2015, Warfront is the sire of 12 stakes winners, 6 graded stakes winners, including 3 grade 1 winners. Stands at Claiborne Farm. For more on the stallions at Claiborne, call Bernie Sams at 859-233-4252 and see the website, claibornefarm.com. I want to talk about my good friends Hill and Reagan Parker, who are in the real estate business. Before they got into the real estate business, they were horsemen. Reagan married Hill. Of course, Hill is used to train, used to ride steeplechase races. I mean, he's kind of screwy when you do something like that, but he's a great guy and a superb horseman. And they do even better in the real estate business because they've got over a dozen years' experience in real estate now. And their listings include properties at Fayette, Bourbon, Jesmond, Woodford, Scott, Clark. Outstanding variety of locations and sizes and prices. I'll give you the website here in just a minute. But if you want to list your place, I would definitely recommend it when time comes, when we have to sell our farm. The first people we're going to call would be Hill and Reagan Parker. And I tell you what, if you're looking for a place right now, they can find the perfect farm for you. And by golly, they'll keep going until they do find it for you. They're wonderful people to work with. They've got great properties on sale right now. Go to that website. They've got one over on Hume Bedford over in Lexington. That's getting close to Bourbon County. And great place. They're part of the old Forester Treat Farm they've got for sale. 40 acres, and it's a wonderful place, wonderful spot. And, of course, they raised both Kentucky Derby winner and an Oaks winner. Right there. So it's Hill and Reagan Parker, and here's their website. It's LexHorseFarms.com, or give them a call, 859-608-8039. Okay, there are 1,485 yearlings cataloged for the Fasig Tipton Fall Sale, which begins Monday and lasts for 4 days. I've never seen such a catalog in my life, I think it's... That sale is really gone. I'd suggest if you're looking for a runner, go first to a farm that established record for raising runners, and that would be Polk McLean's Crestwood Farm. They're in Barn G out at Fasig Tipton. They've raised well over 256 horses at Crestwood, and Crestwood is the only farm to raise 3 fillies. They went on to earn more than $1 million each, including one of them is in the Hall of Fame. They know how to raise a good horse. So go to Barn G, where you find a wide variety of stallions represented, including Munnings, the nation's leading second crop sire, The very face stud horse, the Factor, his first foals of yearlings, Warrior's Reward, Champion Hands, and English Channel, Classic Winner Drosselmeyer, Millionaire Get Stormy, and Sprightstown's Young Son Country Day. Chances are you find just what you're looking for, save you a lot of time, so go shop with certainty, the certainty that the yearling you're inspecting has been raised the right way at Pope McLean's Crestwood Farm. Barn G. For more on the farm, go to crestwoodfarm.com.
Now, back to Horse Tales with Ursel Ellis.
All righty. I'm talking to Jimmy Boyd here. I'm going to let Jimmy go here in just a second. He's been kind enough to come in. And I don't know any one person in Central Kentucky who's got his raising, taking care of more horses than you are, Jimmy.
It was pretty mind-boggling when I first went there, but I got it organized with the help of a girl named Gina that works for my boss.
Uh-huh.
And we organized it, and we got them all on paper. And well, she's got it on computer, too.
Yeah.
So we actually know. There is some horses out there. We don't know who they are. But we have them identified with a letter or a number.
Oh, okay.
Because Susan actually was in charge of all that.
Yeah.
And some of the horses we don't know, but we take care of them just like they were.
Yeah.
They were hers.
Yeah. So they don't have to be mere worthbreds to be accepted with you, though. But they would be preferred.
They would be preferred, but actually, so we actually sold 25 horses when I first went there in 2012.
Uh-huh.
They were racehorses, mares and foals, yearlings, and with them being sold, we put in their envelope that they could always come back to Merriworth when they're done with
yeah.
them. If they didn't want to continue to raise them or keep them, they got to always have a home at Merriworth Farm. Yeah.
How long did, now, were you working for Susan before all this?
I'd never met Susan. The way I got my job was through Bill Justice.
Okay.
A realtor.
Yeah, right.
He had made contact with Elizabeth Hughes, who's one of my bosses, and she was looking for a farm manager.
Yeah. She's the lawyer in charge of that.
Yes.
Yeah, we surprised, but we didn't think that we knew her, but we did.
Yeah.
We used to go to the same church together.
Oh, okay.
Down in Bourbon County. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She called me on a Tuesday, and I went and interviewed with them on a Friday.
Yeah.
And I went to work for the following Wednesday.
That's great.
It's been 4 years, and I hope to do another 10 years.
I hope to do, too. Well, listen, I want to thank you for coming in, Jimmy. It's been fun talking to you.
I appreciate it.
And
you come back anytime.
Oh.
I'd love to. I really enjoyed it.
I'll take you down and show you the ducks in the duck house.
The duck house. We have ducks. How many ducks you got?
We got about 14 ducks. We raised them in the stall this past winter, and then we turned them out on the pond.
Okay.
So you got a little duck house down there on the pond for them?
Yep, and it's the color of the barn, green and white.
Oh, funny.
I'll tell you one funny story real quick.
All right.
A couple of years ago, my two bosses that are females decided they were going to paint my house to make it look like the barns. Well, the gentleman that's up, my other boss, is a man, and so for about a year they talked about it, and then the ladies won him over. They actually painted my house to look like the color of the barns.
Okay.
And it makes it look a lot bigger.
So you live on the property?
Yeah, we all live on the property. Actually, seven other people that work with me live on the property,
okay.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can't get away from your work that way.
No, and the thing is, you're at your work. You can't be late either.
No.
You shouldn't be. No. You live on the farm. You can't call in because there's a lot of snow on the road.
Right. Exactly.
I'll come and get you.
All right. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Jimmy. Okay. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
No.
Appreciate it.
Anytime. I get to keep these things.
All righty. Let me see here, Jackie, and then you can do some announcements. Wait a minute, I think Ed's here. Yeah, here comes Ed, just right in the night.
Of course.
There we go.
You're welcome.
Well, First Defense began his career at stud by signing an Eclipse Award winner in his first crop, and his success has continued with every crop to reach the races, including two-year-olds of 2015. Antonoa, a current two-year-old, has won group stakes in France this year, and here's another First Defense two-year-old. There is always another runner by First Defense to keep your eye on. In Our Defense has posted two impressive wins in as many starts, the most recent on October 10 at Laurel. First Defense, a grade one winner by Unbridled Song out of Empire Maker's grade one winning half-sister Honest Lady by Seattle Slough, stands at Judmont Farm. Also standing at Judmont is the grade one winner, Mizzen Mass. Sire of seven grade one winners. Sire of the winners of three Breeders' Cup races and a son of the champion, Sire Cozine. For more on the Judmont Stallions, get in touch with Gary DeWorker and Friday, 859-272-7629. See the website at judmont.com. Well, horses raised on products from McCauley Brothers ran 1-3 in the $200,000 Pebble Stakes at Columbus Day at Belmont. The winner was Partisan Politics, bred by Dale Ridge Farm. Finishing third was Consumer Credit, bred by Stone Street Thoroughbred Holdings. Through Monday, horses raised on McCauley Brothers products have won 165 stakes this year, with over half of them, 83 to be exact, coming in graded stakes, and that includes 30 grade one stakes, and you can bet we've missed a few of them along the way. I try to keep up with it, but ain't no way. But anyway, now let me remind you that the top price yearling at the Keeneland September sales was $2,100,000 for a colt raised on McCauley products. Or right over here at Gainesway Farm. In fact, four of the eight yearlings that sold for more than $1 million were raised on McCauley products. So for maximum results at the races and at the sales, look to McCauley Brothers and to join the winning team. Just call Mike Warren or David Longmire at 859-873-3333. Ask about free services available. See the website at McCauleyBros.com, and you're always welcome to stop by the office at 111 Broadway in Versailles. McCauley Brothers, where it's all about the horse. Well, my daily racing form had not arrived yet. I hate that. You know, I feel like I'm going through withdrawal. But but anyway, well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to sign up for the Daily Racing Form Breeding Update. It's free, and all you have to do is go to drf.com/breeding update and sign up. I would recommend that you do that today. Of course, the Daily Racing Form is on the Tuesday edition. Incidentally, you can get North American Stakes results, the most comprehensive stakes report available for owners and breeders, providing full details of all black type stakes in North America, including pedigrees and progeny reports of the female family, information on the winning sires and everything like that. So it's a great addition. People should actually take the racing form every day. I don't see how you can do without it. I get mine every day, late today, but I'm going to get it. Anyway, so go to drf.com/breeding, and, that's, of course, that's the Racing's Bible, the Daily Racing Form.
You're listening to Horse Tales with Ursulele.
All righty. I've got an old friend in with me, right? Just staggered in the door here. Ed Bowen. Ed, how you doing?
I'm fine. I didn't stagger. I walked in.
Okay.
I could be misconstrued.
Well, when you get to be as old as I am, you stagger a little bit. So, of course, you're not as old as I am.
It's close. It's always been close.
No, not really.
I've never caught you, but I've always been tracking you. I'm right off the... Just tucked in behind you a little bit there.
Well, you have teamed together with Bob Clark, sitting over here on my left, for a book called A Brush with Greatness. And it's the art of the thoroughbred racing, North American horses from 2000 to the Triple Crown. Now, the 2000, why'd you start at 2000, Bob? Is that when you started painting?
Sounded like a good number.
Okay.
Right. I mean, really, doesn't it sound better than 1993?
Well, I don't know.
Or 2006?
I don't
2000's
like...
a good number.
Yeah, okay. All right, I'll take it. You know, I go back a little further than that, you know, but I don't believe I've ever lived in a year with three zeros in it before, other than once. But...
Well, it's interesting to use the phrase turn of the century and be able to actually remember it.
Well, that's true. I don't remember two of them, but I remember one anyway.
Right.
Although I've been accused of remembering two.
Well, maybe we can be like Fred Hooper, who lived in three centuries. Now, he didn't live for three centuries, but he was born in the 1890s and died in the 21st century. But I don't think you and I have that shot, because we were born too soon in the middle of a century.
Friend of mine called me about a year ago and wanted me to breed to one of his horses, and I said, I don't have any mares. He says, all my mares died of old age. And he says, well, get in there, and, you know, we'll get you to this horse. And I says, wait a minute. You think I'm Fred Hooper or something? You know, I don't want a broodmare. <You know? laughs> So anyway, this is a fun book. I've had a chance to sit down and go through it. And a lot of horses in there. I guess these are the ones that are in there, are the ones just the ones you painted, though, right?
Well, it's kind of hard to be in there if I didn't paint them.
Well, that's true. But or there's some. These are the ones that you selected.
Well, the painting of the horses has been going on for over 10 years for the book.
Okay.
And when Ed and I started talking about this year and a half ago, it was like, okay, here's what we have to work with. And if we put together a book like this, who really can we not leave out? And that left us about a year to catch up with another 10 horses that these horses just had to be painted to be put in the book, have Ed write them up and go from there. So it's really kind of what I had, which were basically all grade one winners to begin with. And then we added a couple that we would say in our industry are household names.
Yeah. American Pharoah's not in there yet.
Yes, he is.
Is Bob, he? Okay.
Yes, Bob he is. Did an amazing job.
Okay.
And he did it well. He even, after the Triple Crown, people knew about the book was about to come out, and Bob kept hearing people say, gosh, he can't have that book without American Pharoah. And we realized that was true. And not only did he do the painting, but if you remember the backdrop at Belmont Park, they have these plaques that show the silks of all Triple Crown winners, and he even put in that detail. So it was a rush job, but it was done quickly, but not haphazardly, and it's a very nice painting, and that became the 79th horse in the book, and it required another chapter.
Oh yeah,
and an epilogue.
And actually, and I think I may have mentioned this to you last time, that the epilogue was something that, again, was a result of the American Pharoah, but I immediately started jumping into this painting once Ed and other people convinced me that we had to kind of put everything on hold and get American Pharoah in there. And I wasn't really thinking, but the day I finished the painting of American Pharoah, I thought about the book, and I thought, you know what? What I would like more than anything is Ed and I had worked so closely together and kind of gone beyond just being partners on the book, but becoming really good friends. And my respect for him goes back to the very first day I met him 12, 13 years ago, realizing I had many of his books already on my shelves. And I was sitting there thinking, you know, just as a racing fan, me, the thing I'd like most out of this book is to actually hear his personal thoughts on what American Pharoah meant to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that to him, and then he sat down and penned out what became the epilogue to the book. And in most books, you know, the epilogue might be back there by the index, and there's a few more pages afterwards and so forth. And I said, no. When you close the book and you open up that back cover, that's the thing I want to see, is I want to see Ed Bowen tell me what it meant to him after mm-hmm. all of his years in the industry as a writer, covering, you know, being right there firsthand with Secretariat, you know, what American Pharoah meant to him. And I'll tell you what, I got goosebumps when I read it.
It's good. Of course, he's been one of my favorite writers for many, many years now.
Thank you. Thank you.
But the best thing you ever think, I think, was the Man of War thing.
Oh, really?
The book. Until this, okay?
Huh?
Until this.
All right. Well, we had to wait a couple of years to see another Triple Crown winner, didn't we?
That's right. We were talking about age earlier, and I had seen the previous ones too, as you did. So I've now seen four in my lifetime, mm-hmm. and expect to see some more. Well, I think the one thing about this book you may have talked about before, that Bob came up with the idea of asking the owners to contribute personal memories.
Fascinating.
And that turned out that many of these people, he had a very good relationship because of having worked with them. And I always think of it must be very gratifying for Bob to be in people's minds. He told me the occasion of a guy calling him from the winner's circle after a grade one race, saying, I'm in the winner's circle, get your brushes ready. So
yeah.
anyway, but the comments by owners really is a nice sort of makes the book a little more an intimate look at being a thoroughbred owner. And one of my favorites is Mr. Steinbrenner's daughter talking about how much it meant to her, how much when she was sort of get down in the dumps, it would give her a brighter outlook if she would just go back.
Now, which horse was that?
And read and listen to the tape of Bellamy Road.
Bellamy Road?
He won the Wood Memorial by 17 lengths and became a favorite for the Derby. And Mr. Steinbrenner, for all his reputation of being a tough son of a gun, he was very near hero worship when it came to horse racing. Mm-hmm. I remembered an article that we had, and I was with the Blood Horse, a cover article that Dan Mearns wrote with Mr. Steinbrenner, interviewing Mr. Steinbrenner, and he listed just the people in the racing game that he so much admired. And so it's a different look at him, and for his daughter to have that sentimental connection to a race that he won, that she can go back and make her day brightened still by watching that tape, is a great example of what being a thoroughbred owner, what a horse can do for you.
Let me read it.
Okay, great.
All right. This is Jessica Steinbrenner. It's an owner's memory, talking about Bellamy Road. Bellamy Road, winning the Wood Memorial, is my go-to race when I need to feel utter happiness. I know the result every time, but I still wait to hear my dad's name after Bellamy crosses the wire ahead of the field by more than 17 lengths. So that is touching.
It really is. Really is.
It is. And there's one on every horse in there.
Well, in some cases, the owner wasn't available. Some had passed away. Sometimes it just didn't work out. So we would endeavor to find something, either as the trainer, the breeder, or in some cases, we went back and found something that had been in the press, which we attributed to that. I remember there was one that particular. It was my fault. I had not had the updated email for Mr. Farish, and I thought he just wasn't responding. In fact, he wasn't getting my emails. So we wound up finding a quote in the Blood Horse after the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And he was speaking about how that race meant so much to him. And then his partner made this great comment up for a sophisticated owner. He's in the winner's circle, and he says, "I just want to pet the horse once."
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's great.
Well, it reminds you that they are animals that their owners have a great deal of affection for.
Got to take a little break, and I'll get right back to you. I'm talking to Bob Clark and Ed Bowen, and we're talking about their book, A Brush with Greatness, The Art of the Thoroughbred Racing. And it's a fun book to read. I mean, I've been reading it, but I haven't got through it yet. But here we go. Well, the first foal's by Albertus Maximum, a two-year-old. He's the star of My Heart Goes On. Never out of the money in five starts. Winner of a first start at 4.5 furlongs. Winner in a second start of the Angie C. Stakes, going 6 furlongs. Placed in 3 more stakes, a distance is up to 1 mile and 1/16. Of Azuma Mura, winner of her first start, going 5.5 furlongs at law. And of Double Fondo, winner of his first start by 8 lengths, a new track record time, and then second in Group 3 stakes. That's a nice start for Albertus Maximus, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, of the Grade 1 Don at 9 furlongs, and of the 1 mile Windy Sands Handicap at Del Mar. His time in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile was 1:33.2. He placed in 3 more graded stakes, and he earned over $1,328,000. Albertus Maximus is at Shadwell Farm. Call stallion manager Kent Barnes at 859-224-4585. Ask about breeding incentives and see the website at shadwellfarm.com.
Want unlimited access to pedigrees for more than 2 million foals? Then Brissette.com's American Produce Records is for you. Updated in real time and available on demand. Go to brisnet.com/APR. Optimized for tablet and mobile, brisnet.com's APR online is the place for instant access to a wealth of information on nearly every North American thoroughbred dating back more than a century. Race records, public auction prices, pedigree statistics, and more, all included for $275 per year. Visit brisnet.com/APR and discover why the APR has been the choice of bloodstock and racing professionals for generations, and why a new generation is using APR online.
Yeah. Well, Colonel John is a sire of 2 2-year-olds that have earned their way to the Breeders' Cup. Arrow Force, by virtue of his victory in the Grade 3 Bourbon Stakes at Keeneland, is eligible for the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Cocked and Loaded won the Grade 3 Iroquois at Churchill. He earned a berth in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Note that one has gained status by competing on grass, the other on dirt. The Colonel Johns can run on anything. Colonel John is North America's second-ranked third-crop sire with only Pioneer the Nile, his stablemate at Windstar Farm, outranking him. So he's in good company.
Like his progeny, Colonel John was versatile. He won the Grade 1 Travers on the dirt, sprinted a mile on the grass, and won 32-3 to win the Wicker. He also won stakes at 2, 3, and 4 every year he raced. He is by the great Tisnow, who stands at Windstar Farm. To learn more about the Windstar Stallions, call Kyle Wilson, Sean Tugler, Carol, and Walsh at 859-873-1717. Take a look at the website, windstarfarm.com.
Now, back to the Thoroughbred Training Center and Ursel Ellis.
All right, well, I'm talking to Bob Clark and Ed Bowen, who have put out the book, A Brush with Greatness, which features paintings by Bob. And we had Bob on, a couple of weeks ago. Was it last week? A couple of weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, anyway. We talked about his painting and so forth. I haven't had Ed on for a while. Ed's done just about everything.
Thank you. That's
and
about
done
right.
It well.
Well, see, I hope so.
I can say that I've done all these things, but I've been very mediocre. But anyway, I've had fun along the way. Ed, the Triple Crown winners, we talked about. You had seen Citation, of course. That you were just you had to be 5 years old or something like that?
Well, I saw him when I was about 15, when he was a stallion that got him. My first trip to Kentucky was, I talked my parents into coming up here instead of, we used to go to North Carolina or Virginia for vacation, and I had become a great racing fan and wanted to see Nashua. He was his first year at stud, so we came in 1957 and went to Calumet, and I did see Citation, but I, of course, I'd never seen him race.
Well, I didn't see him race. I saw Coaltown race. I saw him win the Bluegrass, and I thought sure Coaltown was going to win the Derby.
Yeah, that was quite a
wrong.
Yeah. Well, I always loved Jimmy Jones, the son of Ben Jones. He said that, Ben always said Citation was the best horse. There was a time in the Derby that Coaltown was in front, looking so good that Jimmy thought, I'd had the thought that old man had been fooling me. But then, of course, Citation did come on, and as Mr. Jones said, Citation could catch any horse he could see.
Yeah, and it wasn't nothing wrong with his eyesight.
Right, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's, but I did see Coaltown win, but I didn't see that. I saw the rest of them on TV, but not personally. You saw them personally.
Right. I was in the 70s. I was managing editor of the Blood Horse and had the key responsibility for all the Triple Crown races. And I tell you, Secretariat's Belmont just transcended belief. And it was one occasion where you, as a journalist, you didn't have to show restraint and feel you needed to be objective. There weren't words to describe what that was like. Not only was he winning the Triple Crown in such a tremendous fashion, but that was the way of breaking, at that time, was a 25-year drought, which was the longest drought until, as you know, from a firm to American Pharoah was a longer drought.
Great racehorse.
Well, all the Triple Crown races were, and I'm really a
Wait a minute. Now, they might have been great performances. I don't think he could label some of them great. I mean, I always reminded about the guy that went to visit Charlie Hatton. Charlie Hatton had been around for all these years and had seen all these horses, And somebody had ridden into Charlie and said, would you name the five greatest racehorses in the 20th century? He went to see him in the press box, and Charlie was sitting there just in front of his phone, his typewriter, and he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I got a letter from a guy wanting me to name five great racehorses of the 20th century. He said, "Well, it'll be easy for you." He looked at him and said, "I can't think of but four."
Well, one of the things that was interesting about this Triple Crown is that we in racing had talked about it as this exalted thing so much that it created an impression for some of the sportscasters who were not involved with racing expressed surprise that the horse wasn't retired immediately. We had led the public to believe that this was the ultimate and the pinnacle of any horse, and what we didn't remind them until this happened was that no Triple Crown winner ever retired immediately after the race was retired on purpose. Count Fleet never got back to the races because of an illness, of an injury, but that was not on purpose. So,
see, I wouldn't have labeled him great.
You know, I think that's a good debate. It's surprising to me that in an era where in a time that handicap racing was so important, that a horse would be hailed so as a great horse without having run in handicaps. And I was, I'm reminded by having an interview with Ogden Phipps, who was a wonderful gentleman and had been around a long time. And he named Count Fleet as one of the couple of the greatest horses he had ever seen. So that's it's ironic that that a horse who never raced again after the Belmont was rated so highly.
John H. Clark did too. I talked to John, you know,
did
one
he?
Time.
Trader Clark, yeah.
He said, yeah. And but you know, like you say, he never ran after the Belmont.
Yeah.
And Occupation had beaten him twice as a 2-year old. And you know, so I would, you know.
Well, I imagine that him winning the Belmont by 25 lengths created
he had blue swords to be
a similar
that's all.
Impression that Secretariat winning by 31 did years ago. Years
well,
later.
Secretariat's time was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, the way he did that, but Count Fleet's was not.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, and well, I know we can, that's something you can argue forever. And, but who would you, I know who you thought was the greatest racehorse of all time.
I would have to. It's not very original to say Man of War, but I kind of lean that way. Although I know any horse can you can parse their career and so forth. And Man of War had the phenomenon of having a lot of small fields. Maybe you could criticize him that way. I know in trying in Bill Knack's eulogy of Secretariat, it requires pecking away at Man of War to make the case that Secretariat is the greatest of all time, which Bill Knack is very good at doing. But
well, it reminds me of the story about Vanderbilt, you know, who had Native Dancer. And when they put that statue up of Man, of Secretariat, he wandered around and looked at it, you know, and he says, well, says, I see they left room for all the names of those horses who beat him.
Right. He, Mr. Vanderbilt, as you can imagine, if you were the breeder and owner of Native Dancer, and your horse lost by a neck in the Derby and nothing else, no other loss, you would think, gosh, you know, that's the greatest horse ever.
Yeah, right.
I can give him leeway for that.
Yeah. Okay, let me take one more, do one more commercial here, and we'll get right back to you and find out where we can get a hold of this book, all right?
Okay.
Got to take care of my friends over at Spendthrift Farm. Arch is siring runners, even though he was a superior grade one stakes winner going 9 furlongs, and that he descends from the noted stamina line of Arch, Chris S., and Roberto. His first crop 2-year-olds have come out running. Toes on the Ice, Never Out of the Money, has won the $100,000 Barrett's Juvenile in California. And Next Shares finished second in Saratoga's Grade 2 with Anticipation Stakes. Then there's Arcatur, won a first time out of a maiden special at Del Mar. Archella, a maiden special winner at Delaware, at Del Mar, I should say. A Theory of Change, a winner first time out of a maiden special at Saratoga. Tia Floor, she won her second start in a maiden special at Keenan. What a Classy Lady, a maiden special winner at Churchill. Now, we can go on. Because there's 20 of his first crop 2-year-olds that have won a place. Arch is a real bargain sire. He stands for $5,000. Don't have to pay it until the foal stands up and looks at you. And he's eligible for Spendthrift's popular Breed Secure program. And did you see Conquest Enforcer, a 2-year-old corporal in a mischief, win the $150,000 Cup and Saucer Stakes at Woodbine? Won by 6 3/4 lengths. That was last Sunday. Like Arch in the mischief stands at Spendthrift Farm. For more on the stallions there, just get in touch with Des Dempsey, Brian Lyle, Mark Toothacker, 859-294-0030, and see the website at SpendthriftFarm.com.
Now, back to Horsetails with Ursula Ellis.
Ed, I'm going to have you on sometime. We can just sit here and argue for 2 hours.
Well, that'd be good. That would be good, and I'd say the over-under on your audience hearing the last of that would be about 20-1. You could drive some people to some other stations with 2 hours.
Two hours
of you and me.
Okay. Okay, well, you've got the book. A Brush with Greatness. Are you going to have a book signing on this? And if so, when and why not?
We have had a number of book signings. Oh. It came out in July. The first we were committed to the Rudin Riddle Hats Off Day book signing, and then we both were in Saratoga at the same time, so we had some book signings at the National Museum and so forth. And Bob, what else do we have planned? I'm game.
Well, I think we're going to work on trying to come up with something over at Keeneland before the meet ends. Don't have the details on it yet. We'll be doing something with the airport. There's a show over there. Hawkins Smith Gallery has a show of 21 of the prints from paintings in the book are there. And so Ed and I will be kind of tag teaming doing book signings at the airport as people leave after the Breeders' Cup, the Sunday and Monday after the Breeders' Cup. So that's what I can tell you right now. If you're looking for the book, it is in the Keeneland gift shop. It's also online at Amazon and a few other spots around town. Hawkins Smith Gallery does have the books as well.
Why have you got in touch with Joseph Beth or anything, Ed? I mean, I see your books in there.
Well, we're trying to do this in the way that I guess we're selling in a way that the commission to the seller isn't as high, so and to the bookstore isn't as high. To be honest,
yeah,
and it's selling out. We're coming near the end of
We've actually got less than 100 books.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's it. Wow. That is it. And whether or not we do a second edition, that all depends. Mm-hmm. And at the rate that we're going with the book signings that we've got scheduled and so forth, I don't see us going much past the Breeders' Cup with it.
Uh-huh.
I really don't.
Well, you came in here with Michael Blowen.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're doing anything over with old friends?
The day after the Breeders' Cup on that Sunday, as Ed and I are tag-teaming over at the airport, I committed several months ago to do a quick painting of whoever wins the Classic. Over there and give them a day's worth of painting to get something that they'll auction off on the spot.
Well,
we started doing that 10 years ago back with Barbaro. And so over the years, I've popped in and done work for them that way.
Well, cheat a little bit. Who's going to start, you know, handicap the Classic and then
work? I can't even tell you if it's going to be a boy or a girl that wins it.
that reminds me of Bob's painting of Beholder that's in the book is owned by Mr. Hughes. And Mr. Hughes was kind enough to let it be exhibited during the special show at the Healy Whitney Museum that Alec Head's daughter, Martine, put together. And a friend of mine was in there the other day, and she said, I just was struck by that Beholder painting and just stared at it, just was awed by the painting. And I think that tipped her to thinking that she's going to Beholder will win the Classic. So Bob is inadvertently touting Beholder.
Okay. Well, you've got a vested interest there. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to let you guys go because I'm running out of time. And I appreciate you coming by. And I enjoyed the book, and I'm going to sit down and finish reading it. I had read your story on American Fair. Well, that's the reason I wanted to ask you about greatness of the Triple Crown winners.
Well, I'll be curious to see. This is the first time the Triple Crown has been won during the era that we have a Breeders' Cup. And I'll be curious to see how the new voters, the younger voters, respond to a Triple Crown winner if he were to not win the Breeders' Cup, for instance. So that's an interesting dynamic.
Well, he's got a tough field to beat.
He does. He does.
Yeah, and speaking of Beholder, I've watched her run a couple of times. Of course, we don't know how she ships and runs too much, but I'm kind of surprised that they didn't give her a race here.
I kind of am, too, but I don't second-guess Dick Mandela very often.
Me either. I was lucky to win at Riverdance. Okay, got to let you go.
You.
Appreciate you stopping by, Bob.
Thank you.
Ed, and come back, my friends.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking to you guys next week. We got a minute left, you know. Well, gee whiz, I can whistle, sing, or do something anyway. I'll spare them that. Well, appreciate Dave down at the studio. Appreciate your help. And Ressi here in the HPPA office or KTA office. It depends on which side you read. All right. We'll talk to you all next week. Thanks for listening.